Hi, I'm Andrew Fryer, an evangelist at Microsoft in the UK. And I'm joined by Glenn Pittaway, who's in charge of the security development lifecycle in Redmond.
Correct.
And what are you doing over here, Glenn?
Well, primarily seeing my mum for her 70th birthday, but I'm actually doing some customer visits while I'm over the Atlantic.
Well, anyway, I found out Glenn was over here, and I thought it'd be great to get him in front of the camera and find out a little bit about what SDL is all about. And so we'll probably start there, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm a Principal Group Program Manager in Microsoft. I'm responsible for the Security Development Lifecycle Policy, which is really formulating the requirements that we need to implement in SDL, which we release on a regular basis. But let me talk about what SDL actually is. SDL was our response to the big worm era, if you like, round about the early 2000s, which resulted in the TWC memo that Bill Gates sent out to the company, which basically asserted that security was job one for the company, and we had to make sure that our products, from the point of view of how they impacted customers, were secure and to the level that our customers demanded of us. It was a major problem for customers, and it impacted our reputation a great deal. Around about that time, our first response to the memo was to initiate security pushes, which were where we would stand down the development organization. The first one was Windows, which really it was the Windows organization, but the changes that amounted from it occurred in Windows Server 2003. And the security push was very, very intense training for about 9,000 odd people who we trained for a week, and then we let them loose on the source code for what amounted to 2 months in the end, and they did all sorts of different activities depending on what their discipline was. So if it was a program manager, they would do threat modeling type activities and figure out if there were any mitigations that needed to be added. If they were developers, they did code reviews and made sure that, you know, after they'd been trained on what things like buffer overruns were, they could go in and look at the source code and file bugs if they needed to. And if they were testers, they were taught various testing techniques like fuzzing, for example, and start to test the code and make sure that the testing tools that they had were sufficient. And that was the first security push on Windows. As it turned out, Windows Server 2003 was the most secure version of the product we produced to date at that time. The next, we kind of regard that as SDL version 1. On the success of that, we went back to the executives who'd given us the mandate to do the security pushes. And in 2004, SDL was made mandatory for all products that are enterprise-facing and or internet-facing, which is pretty much everything that we have inside Microsoft. And SDL has evolved over that point. We took the original approach, which was around doing activities at the end of the development lifecycle, which is not ideal, but it was all we could do at that point. And we've embedded them into the development lifecycle. We have a series of phases, and you do different activities depending on what your discipline is and what phase you're in. So you do design. In the design phase, for example, you would do threat modeling. In the verification phase, you would do fuzzing and other types of testing. We release now on a yearly basis, which means that we take the learnings that we've had from the teams doing their SDL compliance, also new threats that we found. We have kind of a nice feedback loop with MSRC.
Yeah.
And we revise the SDL on a yearly basis. Currently, internally, we're version 4.x, and we released that last October. Version 5 is due this October.
Yeah, and obviously, internally, I can imagine you and your team are going around making sure that the development teams are up to speed and spreading the word and trying to deal with some of the cultural issues, which I want to come back to in a minute. But we've now release this and unleash this thing on the world, so that, for example, if I was writing graphics drivers for Windows or if I was writing some third-party application, I can get stuck into that. What prompted that decision to make it publicly available?
Well, our products tend not to be standalone applications. We provide platforms typically, even Office is a platform because there are many plugins. People build things on top of Office. And it's kind of, you get to the stage where we will always continue to invest in SDL, and we will hopefully keep raising the bar, but there is only so much we can do when the ecosystem on top of those products is not also addressing the same problems. From a customer point of view, you know, we get a lot of credit for doing SDL. From a perception point of view, we don't get a lot of credit for doing SDL if some anonymous third party writes insecure code and that gets exploited. If it runs on our platform, it tends to be perceived as our problem.
Yeah.
So you could regard it as enlightened self-interest, but what we've been doing a lot more is to go outside with the SDL message and make available SDL to the wider world. And it's not like we've only just started doing it. Around about 2005, we made available a Michael Howard white paper.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after that, there was the SDL book by Michael Howard and Steve Lipner. And since then, we've kind of increased the pace. We now make available the SDL externally roughly about 5 months after we do it internally. We need to do various sanitizing of things, you know, make sure that we've mapped tools that we have internally, which we can't make externally available, onto what's commercially available, and things of that nature. And we release it roughly around the time of RSA. So we'll be 5.0 in October, we'll be 5.0 in externally in probably about April of next year.
So some people would see this, you know, in a third-party organisation as something obviously Microsoft has got to do, but in sort of times of recession, this is an overhead that perhaps is hard to bear. How would you counter that argument?
The alternative is harder. If you try and fix security problems, you know, late in the game, the cost, I think there was a NIST study that showed that it was roughly 30 times more expensive fix late in the game as opposed to like in the design phase. But equally, statistics show that very few developers actually really do any security testing or this kind of security work before release, which kind of begs the question, who's doing the security work? I guess it's your customers in some instances.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it does come down to the fact that in very competitive times, address the problems now or your reputation suffers when you do get caught out and somebody else will make the sale.
Do you have you had to deal with any other sort of, I guess if people see that economic argument, they kind of get it, and that can then hopefully overcome some of the cultural issues perhaps of that you might face trying to implement this in your organisation?
People come to SDL for many reasons. I mean, you know, one of them is, I actually would suspect that you have to have a response organization whatever you do, so the cost is going to be built in there. The cost of a response, a particular incident, is actually quite substantial. I don't know if there are any official figures on it, but it's many thousands of dollars. But actually, I think most people come to it from a reputation point of view. You know, they start to become a focus for security researchers. They start to be seen as somehow insecure, and their customers ask them questions about it. It's very uncomfortable. Kind of like the same stage we were at in 2001 that prompted the TWC memo. But once they get it, they adapt to it very quickly, because it's like, well, okay, it's not rocket science. It's not trivial, but it's also something that seems fairly intuitive once you get going.
And obviously we've released this stuff. Exactly what are the resources that we provide to industry to help them get on this road?
Well, we've got the SDL requirements themselves. We've also got a threat modeling tool, the SDL threat modeling tool version 3.1, which is a nicely integrated tool. It has its own workflow in it, so you can do your data flow diagrams in the tool. You can then do your threat modeling. It has the STRIDE methodology that we use built into it. Identify mitigations that you want to apply, and you can track the threats that you figure as significant as bugs. It integrates into your bug tracking database, produces you know, various reports that you can use. A question we often get asked is how do we go about implementing SDL for the first time, because it's obviously not trivial, and it would be foolish to sort of expect you to get to the same level that we've done. It's taken us several years. So what we've also done is we've released we've released what's called the optimization model, which you could think of as a maturity model. And it helps customers to look at their what they do now and then say roughly into, they might fit roughly into the basic stage, and then they can plan their improvement through the standardized, advanced and dynamic levels of SDL. Many companies won't have their own resources in some of these areas. They might not be able to train their developers. They might not understand threat modeling properly. So there also is a thing called a Pro Network, which we announced last year. It's currently in a beta, a year-long beta. Started in November, so I guess it ends in November of this year. Currently, there are 11 members, including one British company, NGS. And they provide, they're security service providers, so they can help companies that need the resources themselves. And lastly, we've also got the we've also released the process template, which is a Team Foundation Services add-in, and that allows you to kind of run your process along the lines of SDL. So it has the requirements built in, allows you to take tasks and assign them to people. It's kind of a nice integrated package.
So there's a whole raft of accessories. There's a whole raft of tools out there, and I'll be putting up a slide at the end of this talk so we can direct you to where they are.
The SDL portal, microsoft.com/SDL. Yeah.
Perfect. And on that note then, sir, I think we shall get on with our weekend, and thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.